I fell into a clever student trap the other day at the university. One of the girls said with a serious face, "I am sure God intended us to laugh." She waited a moment for our curiosity to bloom and then dropped her bomb. "He must have. He created religion." Well, I'm not sure religion should be blamed on God, but I had no quarrel with the first half of her comment. I am sure God intended us to laugh, to keep us healthy, to keep us sane, to keep us from killing one another. To laugh even at religion when it needs to be laughed at. Mark Twain has a story about how he got so upset over the discord among God's creatures that he took it upon himself to do something. "So I built a cage, and in it I put a dog and a cat. And after a little training, I got the dog and cat to the point where they lived peaceably together. Then I introduced a pig, a goat, a kangaroo, some birds, and a monkey. And after a few adjustments, they learned to live in harmony. So encouraged was I by such successes that I added an Irish Catholic, a Presbyterian, a Jew, a Muslim from Turkestan, and a Buddhist from China, along with a Baptist missionary that I captured on the same trip. And in a very short time, there wasn't a single living thing left in the cage." I wonder whether Mark could still tell jokes, or whether he would only shake his head and shed a tear to see us now. Arab versus Jew, Muslim versus Christian, Irish Catholic versus Irish Protestant. One of the terrible ironies of history is that religion has been one of the main causes of conflict. Faith is offered as a basis for harmony and salvation, but it becomes, as often as not, a cause of hostility and destruction. Holy cities become places where the most unholy atrocities are justified. The cross itself, a symbol of love and mercy and forgiveness, turns into a banner under which people parade into battle. Christians sing about the foot of the cross. The foot of the cross has proved to be one of the best places for a fight. Conrad Hyers, in a book called The Comic Vision and the Christian Faith, recalls how he once discovered, while he was studying early film comedy, a letter to W.C. Fields from a Catholic niece in Ireland. She chronicled all the wicked deeds of the Protestants and then added a P.S. "Things might be worse than they are. Thanks be to God, every Protestant church in the country has been burned to the ground." Now, a person who has lost the capacity to see how wildly funny that incongruity is a person capable of doing infinite harm to herself and others. It is a common trait of dictators and ecclesiastical authorities that they cannot laugh at themselves and cannot allow others to laugh at them either, knowing, with Mark Twain, that a hearty laugh can explode more solemn nonsense than all the dynamite in all the warehouses of this world. We are a little encouraged these days by a thing called glasnost. In Russia, the word for openness. It was unusual and wonderful to find a Soviet magazine, after the Stalin years, running a full-page ad announcing a contest for the best political joke or satire of the year. And then after listing the rules, adding at the bottom, first prize, a trip to Siberia. A Russia that could learn to laugh at itself. An America that will insist on laughing at itself might do more for us than all the arms control talks Geneva can host. And when religion gets positively silly, as it often does, the best cure is laughter. Tulsa has been trying to heal Oral Roberts of his most recent nonsense by inventing jokes that will make him see himself as others see him. A Tulsa relative tells me that the new civic slogan is, seen on many bumper stickers, send Oral to heaven in 87. He says, the latest pride-puncturing yarn has Oral going to a mortuary to price the cost of coffin and burial. When he sees the price, he looks at the mortician in astonishment. This much? For only 3 days? Do the stories mean that Tulsa is filled with cruel and vindictive people who really wish Oral harm? Of course not. They counterbalance his penchant for going too far. They are a playful plea for sanity. It may be that Oral has these spells at 10-year intervals. I recall that a decade ago, he said God's message was, expect miracles from heaven in 77. A cute little rhyme that bothered no one very much, but then he announced that he had talked with God and that God had told him what the new jingle would be for the coming year. God won't be late in 78. Now, I think that meant pay up now and be ready when he comes. But what really got my attention was a new discovery. God's apparent appetite for rhyme. Hebrew poetry in the Old Testament, I had taught my students for years, does not rhyme. Could it be, I wondered, that with Oral, only with Oral, God had found a way at last to indulge a long suppressed inclination to rhyming couplets. That God should do this in a world threatened by nuclear war, famine, and AIDS seems so incongruous to me that I cannot help laughing. And the more serious someone got with such stories of a direct pipeline to God and of how God responded in simple verse, the more I would laugh. If my laughter met only a solemn face, then I would agree with that French wit who defined solemnity as a mysterious carriage of the body to cover defects of the mind. Caesar was right in the famous play to be afraid of the grim and serious Cassius. Yon Cassius hath a lean and hungry look. Seldom he smiles. If I were the kind of man to be afraid, says the arrogant Caesar, I do not know a man I'd be more afraid of. Me too. We do not take the comic spirit seriously enough. It's an interesting incongruity. I've taught many times the tragedies of Aeschylus and Sophocles, noble pieces of literature that take us down a descending staircase into the regions of darkness and despair. But I have wondered why we did not give more attention to Aristophanes, who proposed comic solutions to tragic dilemmas, as he did, for example, in Lysistrata. Two towns have been at war with each other forever. The women of both towns have grown weary of seeing their husbands or lovers marching off to the battlefield, giving up the normal joys of life for dubious honor. So, led by a woman named Lysistrata, they deliver an ultimatum to both sides. No more bag lunches, no more sexual favors until the men give up their flag waving and macho talk and come home to stay. After all the racy jokes you can imagine about this new approach to an old problem, the men finally surrender. A new slogan, "Make love, not war," wins the day. Life returns to the simple pursuits of wife, children, job, friends, and housekeeping. These are the people and the activities most important after all. Oh, the good sense of laughter. Have you ever caught yourself being pompous, full of windy words and solemn advice, and suddenly someone laughed at you? If it was a stranger, the sudden deflation probably hurt. All that hot air rushing out of the punctured balloon so suddenly. If it was from one who loved you, then suddenly you could laugh too. And of all things I know, nothing is so wonderfully instructive and healing as to be able to laugh with someone you love at your own folly. The Bible says, pride comes before a fall. And laughter can keep the pride in check sometimes so that there is no fall. We need the words every once in a while of a 16th century French farce. There are those that find such profundities in their minds that if you were to believe their writings, you would think they were God's first cousins. Laughter is the great leveler. Beautiful people with pie on their faces. The poor servant girl who gets fitted with the glass slipper. All the laughter causing reverses in life that give us another reason to understand why the Bible tradition and the comic tradition are so close. Whoever humbles himself will be exalted. How do we do it better than through laughter? How do we humble ourselves better than through laughter? Laughter at the incongruity, the foolishness of much of our posturing and much of our talk. Unless you become like children, you will never enter the kingdom. Who laughs more often, more readily than a healthy child? Think about the whole divine comedy revealed in Scripture. A ragged band of slaves in Egypt are declared winners of the chosen people of God contest. A judge named Gideon defeats the Midianite armies with only 300 men and a few good shouts. David the shepherd boy topples the giant with a single pebble. A peasant girl from Nazareth, can any good thing come out of Nazareth? Somebody asked one day. A peasant girl from Nazareth is visited with the divine announcement. The royal son of David is born in a cattle stall. The most despised man in the village is invited to have tea with the Messiah. The King of the Jews is welcomed into Jerusalem riding on a donkey and crucified, finally, by the solemn and the pompous who had lost the ability to see comic irony in what was happening. I've gotten pretty serious now about humor and its place in God's scheme of things, and I meant to do that. But a sermon on laughter without the sound of laughter would defeat itself. So let's hear that music before we stop. The comedy we get when we combine human weakness with innocence. There is a bestseller in London right now, which is made up of religious anecdotes compiled by a man, a comic actor, who specializes in gentle fun at the expense of the clergy. No group on earth needs it more. They haven't minded because he gives the proceeds of his book to religious charities. So priests and ministers have provided most of the stories. Some of the best are the answers given by children during their religious examinations. Is Noah's wife named? Yes. She was called Joan of Arc. What is the fifth commandment? You have no idea, right? Well, it's not. For this respondent, it is not honor thy father and mother, as it is in the Bible. This little girl wrote, the fifth commandment, : humor thy father and mother. I'd like to meet the little boy who wrote that Lot's wife was a pillar of salt by day, but a ball of fire by night. What is another name for marriage? The children were asked. This child must have come out of quite a home. The answer was holy acrimony. Christians can have only one wife. What is this called? This is called monotony. The patron saint of travelers. One child wrote, is St. Francis of the Seasick. And there was the little girl who was asked how many people were involved in the story of the child Jesus and the flight into Egypt. She said four. Jesus, Joseph, Mary, and Pontius the pilot. And grown-ups haven't forgotten that religion likes a smile. A bulletin board message outside a church in Newcastle, England, said simply, pray now and avoid the Christmas rush. But I think I'd like those people. If you need a biblical sanction for what I'm doing, listen to the poet of Ecclesiastes. There is a time to laugh. To laugh at folly, which hurts people, to laugh at ourselves when we begin to feel too important, to laugh at the incongruities we discover in the very middle of any road we travel, to laugh for no other reason in the world than that a thing is funny. All these kinds of laughter are a gift from God to the only creature on earth that can laugh. Now for a second, I want to introduce something into this sermon I had not planned. I was going to write a little article with a headline that said, Royalty. And you would have understood that headline as soon as you began to read it, because it started out like this. I like the way Dick Houser Kansas City Royals manager, talks about his fight for life against a malignant brain tumor. He credits a deepened faith with helping. But oh, bless him, he stays away from sticky, sentimental piety. He said, I know what people must think. Now that he's in trouble, he's turning to God. Well, maybe I'm a little late, but at least I'm there. I'm trying hard to be a good Christian. I pray every day. And now, just as it begins to get preachery, Dick says, I've stopped screaming and cursing. But that doesn't include umpires. I like that kind of honesty. And humor. And I join all of you and all of his friends in hoping that God will grant him strength and courage. You'd never guess the name of the man who spoke the words I'm going to use now in closing. If you're not allowed to laugh in heaven, I don't want to go there. Not Will Rogers. Not Mark Twain. But that very learned monk who changed religious history, Martin Luther. If you're not allowed to laugh in heaven, I don't want to go there. Thank you, Martin.